And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's A Town Called Fury. Book 2, Hard Country, by William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Danny Gavigan, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Stephen Carpenter, James Konacek, Terrence Aselford, Casey Platt, Jeff Allen, Dylan Lynch, Andy Clements, Christopher Graybill, Gary Tells, Sherry Simpson, Sonny Lasky, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Scott McCormick, Eric Messner, Bren Casey, Mort Shelby, Johan Detweiler, Ken Jackson, Christopher Sheeran, and M.B. Van Dorn. With only a slight limp as a reminder that he had taken an Apache arrow in his left thigh only a few weeks earlier, Jason Fury walked to the door of his newly constructed office and leaned his shoulder against the jamb. He thumbed his hat back on his thick blonde hair, then stood there and looked out at the town. His town, whether he wanted it or not. Pinned to the breast of the buckskin shirt over Jason's broad chest was a badge that his friend Saul Cohen had fashioned out of tin. The word Marshall had been etched into the metal, the letters running in a slight arch across the top half of the badge. Below it, in smaller letters, were the words, Fury, Arizona Territory. Jason hadn't asked for the badge. He hadn't asked for the job, either. But like the Tin Star, it had been sort of forced on him by his friends. Right after the battle with the Apaches that had left him skewered by a couple of arrows, Saul, Salmon Kendall, Dr. Morelli, and some of the other townspeople had come to the room in Nordstrom's Mercantile where Jason was recuperating and announced that if Fury was going to be a proper town, it had to have law and order. They'd elected Jason to be the sheriff and Salmon as the mayor. And they wouldn't take no for an answer, even though they knew that Jason planned to ride on to California, where he hoped to seek higher education and his fortune in San Francisco. It had taken a lot of resolve on Jason's part to leave the settlement. Beautiful, red-headed Megan McDonald was here, and riding out meant never seeing her again. But he had managed to do it, giving her a last kiss and saying goodbye to her forever. Then fate, in the form of a band of bloodthirsty Apaches, had intervened, and Jason had found himself racing back to help defend the town. He had been wounded, laid up, and then elected sheriff before he could do anything about it. Somebody had realized that sheriff was a county-wide office, and since they didn't know what county they were in, or if Arizona Territory even had counties yet, Jason's job title had been changed to that of Marshal of Fury. The words didn't mean all that much, he thought now as he looked down at the badge pinned to his shirt. Whatever you called it, he was still stuck here where he didn't really want to be. But if you want to leave that bad, nobody's stopping you, he reminded himself. He could go down to the livery stable, saddle up Cleo, his Palomino mare, and ride out of Fury once and for all. Some folks, like Matt McDonald, would be glad to see him go, despite the fact that Jason had saved his worthless hide more than once on the trip out here.
Morning, Marshal. How are you this fine day?
Jason looked around to see that Saul Cohen had just walked up. The wiry man in his 30s was probably Jason's best friend in Fury. Saul was smart and had exhibited plenty of courage during the wagon train journey. He and his wife ran the local hardware store and were raising three fine boys. As far as Jason was concerned, Saul was one of Fury's leading citizens, and he didn't give a damn how the Reverend Mr. Milcher felt about Jews.
Still a mite stiff from that arrow wound, but it's getting better. I reckon I'm fine.
Another wagon load of settlers rolled in a little while ago. This brings the population of Fury to 112 souls. Your father would be proud, Jason.
Jason supposed Saul was right. Chances are that Jedediah would have advised against settling here in Arizona and told Saul and the others that they ought to go on to California as they had planned when they left Kansas City. But none of them would ever know for sure. Jedediah Fury had been killed by the Comanches back in Indian Territory and was laid to rest there, only partway through his final trip as wagon master. The task of leading the wagon train on to its destination had fallen to Jedediah's son, Jason. The settlers had made it this far, to the broad, somewhat fertile valley known as El Despoblado, Spanish for the uninhabited place, with its cottonwood-lined creeks and arable soil, before deciding to change their plans and stop to build a new town, a town they would name in honor of Jedediah Fury. And whether Jason liked it or not, he had to admit that in the weeks since the Indian attack, this town called Fury had been growing by leaps and bounds. The settlers all banded together to put up each building in turn. One of the structures that had risen in a hurry was the adobe building that housed the marshal's office. Directly behind it, and connected to it, was a small jail constructed of thick, heavy cottonwood beams. It would be more difficult to break out of than an adobe jail. So far, the lockup hadn't been used, but Jason knew it was only a matter of time before he had to arrest somebody. One of the first things Saul had done, even before getting his hardware store open, was to dig a well for the town. The creeks were flowing right now, but they always ran dry for part of the year. The hope was that the well put in by Saul and several of the other men would never run dry. It sat in the very center of the settlement, under a covered patio to give shade from the merciless sun, and to provide a framework for the mechanism that lifted the water from underground. Surrounding that central plaza were several dozen buildings. Fury already had a look of permanence about it. The town was here to stay. And Jason reckoned, so was he. His feelings for Megan McDonald would see to that, not to mention the responsibility he felt for Saul, Salmon Kendall, and the other settlers. Also, his younger sister Jenny was here, and wasn't likely to be leaving anytime soon. She had fallen hard for Matt McDonald, Megan's older brother. Jason couldn't understand it. Matt was an arrogant, headstrong bully, and he and Jason had disliked each other ever since they met in Kansas City, when Jason stepped in to stop Matt from beating up on a younger, smaller boy. Jenny was normally a smart girl. Shoot, she'd even made it all the way through 8th grade and liked to read. And what she saw in Matt McDonald was just flat out beyond Jason's comprehension.
Ah, you brood too much, my friend. It's enjoying life you should be doing. The town is booming, the Apaches have not returned, and your wounds are almost healed.
Something else will come along, some sort of trouble.
More than likely. Man is born to trouble, as your scriptures say. But we persevere.
I hope you're right.
Saul took a turnip watch from his vest pocket.
I'd best get back and open up.
Saul lifted a hand in a farewell wave as he turned and walked back along the street. His hardware store occupied the first floor of one of the buildings, and the living quarters for Saul, his wife Rachel, and their sons David, Jacob, and Abraham were on the second floor above it. Might as well make his morning rounds, Jason decided. Not that much was going on early in the day like this. Jason tried not to limp as he walked. His leg was getting stronger every day, and he didn't like to give in to any weakness. As he strolled along, he looked past the end of town toward the cottonwood-lined creek and paused as he noticed that three men on horseback had stopped beside the stream to let their mounts drink. At this distance, it was difficult to be sure, but Jason didn't think that he recognized any of the men. It wasn't that unusual for strangers to pass through the area. The wagon trail ran very near the settlement, and not only wagons used it. Men who were headed for California also rode through. They might water their horses and move on. Instead, pulling back on the reins before the horses drank too much, the men turned their mounts and rode into Fury at a slow, deliberate pace. Jason's eyes narrowed as he watched them. A family of settlers in a wagon was one thing. Most immigrants weren't looking for trouble. Men on horseback were another. The men reined to a halt in front of an adobe building at the edge of town. They seemed to know where they were going. Jason wasn't surprised by that. Word got around. Even though there was no sign in front of the building, those men knew where to go to get a drink. Abigail Crimp owned the place. She had been working as a saloon girl in Kansas City when she and her paramour, gambler Rome Lefebvre, had decided to join the wagon train heading west. Jedediah hadn't wanted them along and had said so in no uncertain terms. But the two of them had followed along anyway in their buggy, and eventually Jedediah had relented and let them join up. Rome had been killed in the same clash with the Comanches that had taken Jedediah's life. Abigail hadn't seemed too broken up about losing him. Jason had a feeling that Rome hadn't treated Abigail very well. From there on out, Abigail had been a fairly dependable member of the party and hadn't caused any trouble, although the womenfolk disapproved of her because of her former profession. She made Jason a mite uncomfortable with her open admiration of him. She was around 30 with a lot of red hair piled high on her head and was still attractive in a shop-worn way. Abigail hadn't talked about her plans. Jason had hoped that she intended to open a dressmaking shop or something like that. But once her building was constructed, she had set up a bar and opened for business. Jason hadn't even known she had any liquor along. She must have bought it while the wagon train was stopped in Tucson, he decided, and hidden the kegs in the spare wagon she'd been driving since abandoning the buggy. Reverend Milcher and his wife Lavinia were scandalized by this development, of course. Since Milcher was the one who had put the wagon train together in the first place, in some ways he regarded Fury as his town. Some of the other folks didn't like the idea of having a saloon in the settlement either. Jason wasn't sure what else went on at Abigail's place, especially in the back room, and to tell the truth, he didn't want to know. Even though it was mighty early in the day, that didn't matter to some people, Jason thought, as he watched the men disappear through the open door of the adobe building. Somebody always wanted a drink, no matter what time it was. With a shake of his head, he turned and walked back toward his office. But he hadn't quite gotten there yet.
Whew!
Matt McDonald cuffed his hat back and sleeved sweat from his forehead. Once the sun was up, it got hot in a hurry here in Arizona territory. He had already taken his shirt off, revealing a powerful, well-muscled torso, but he kept his hat on to shade his head as he and Ward Wanamaker used a two-handed saw to cut rough planks from the felled trunks of cottonwood trees. Wash Keough, an old friend of Jedediah Fury who had spent time as a mountain man and had joined the wagon train in Santa Fe, had warned them that cottonwood had a habit of sprouting new growth, even when it was cut down and worked into fence posts or planks. But what the hell else were they going to use for lumber, out here where no other trees were visible for miles around? Even the cottonwoods were found only along creek banks. Other than that, the vegetation in the area consisted of grass and low, scrubby bushes.
We can take a break if you want to, Matt.
Ward was one of the men Jedediah had hired back in Kansas City to come along on the journey as workers, and he had decided to stay and settle in Fury. One of his fellow hired men, Gil Collins, had been the first one to sign on with Matt as a ranch hand, but Gil had been killed by an Apache arrow. Ward had taken his place, but only until Matt got the new spread going. He hadn't committed to staying on full-time. In fact, Matt suspected that Ward didn't like him much. That was all right. Matt didn't care about having friends, as long as he had workers he could depend on. Anyway, Jenny Fury liked him. Jenny liked him a lot. Enough so that she hadn't put up a fuss when Matt had kissed her. He planned to do more than that with Jenny, who was built mighty nice for a girl of 16. He knew that because he had seen her climb out of a rain-swollen creek in only her underwear, after she had jumped in to rescue a mutt that had gotten washed away by the flood. The thin garments had been next to invisible once they were soaked, and the image of Jenny standing there like that, with every curve of her body revealed and her long blonde hair plastered to her head by the water, was burned into Matt's brain. He had decided right then and there that he was going to marry up with Jenny Fury one of these days, and nothing had happened since then to change his mind. The only thing that gave him pause was the fact that Jenny's brother was that high and mighty bastard Jason Fury, who thought he was better than everybody else just because his pa had been the wagon master. Now those fools in the settlement had gone and made Jason their lawman. They would come to regret that decision, Matt was sure of it. They should have let him go on to California like he wanted.
No! Let's get this lumber cut. I want to get that barn up as soon as I can.
The house Matt had started building with Gil Collins' help was pretty much finished now, although some work remained to do on the inside. But it was snug enough for Matt and Ward to sleep in at night, so they moved on to building the barn where Matt's cattle and the fine Morgan horses that had belonged to his father would be housed. Hamish McDonald had valued those horses over almost everything else. More than once, Matt had felt like his father loved the Morgans more than he did his own son. Hamish was gone now, killed when his wagon toppled over the edge of a high mountain range in the Sangre de Cristos, over in New Mexico territory. Matt blamed Jason Fury for his father's death. Jason hadn't wanted to take that upper trail, but he had maneuvered things so that Hamish practically had to if he wanted to maintain any shred of his pride and dignity. Because of that, Hamish had died. Matt had made another vow to himself where the Fury family was concerned, besides planning to marry Jenny. One of these days, he was going to kill her older brother. If it had been up to Ward Wanamaker, he would have built the barn before the house, so that the stock would be protected. Seemed like the animals ought to come first over Matt's comfort. But, of course, it wasn't up to him. Ward was just a hired hand, as he had been all his life. He took orders, worked hard, and stayed out of trouble. Trouble was his first thought as he glanced past Matt and saw a plume of dust rising in the distance. He stopped sawing so suddenly that Matt was thrown off balance for a second.
What? What the hell did you do that for?
The rider's coming.
Matt turned to look, his body stiffening with tension as he did so. Out here, a cloud of dust like that could mean several different things, but few of them were good. Matt grabbed his shirt and began tugging it on in a hurry. Ward picked up the Henry rifle he had leaned against the wall of the house.
Reckon we should go in the house?
Time out for that when we see who they is. Might not be Apaches.
A few minutes later, it became apparent that the approaching riders weren't Indians. The broad-brimmed hats they wore identified them as white men. Ward relaxed a little, but the nervousness he felt didn't go away completely. These strangers could still be up to no good, even if they weren't Apaches. The four men brought their horses to a stop about 20 feet away. The cloud of dust kicked up by the animal's hooves swirled around them for a moment before it began to clear. As it did so, Ward saw that one of the men sat his horse a little in front of the others, as if he were the leader of the group. This man was the oldest of the four, no doubt about that. His hatchet-like face was lined and weathered by years of exposure to sun and wind, and it had been burned to the color of old saddle leather. That made the white of his drooping mustaches stand out starkly. His bushy eyebrows were white as well, and crowded down over deep-set eyes. The brim of the battered old hat he wore was pushed up in front. A pair of gun belts was crisscrossed around his hips. The other three men had the same sort of hard, rugged look about them, if not quite to the extent that the white-haired man did. Ward had a bad feeling in his gut as he studied all four of them.
Who does this here shanty belong to?
This is my house. It's no shanty. Who the hell are you to come in here asking questions?
I'm Ezra Dixon. This is my range.
No, sir, it's open range, and I've claimed it. This is going to be my ranch. I plan to raise the finest horses in the whole territory.
You damn little pissant, you got any idea who you're talking to?
An old man who's too big for his damn britches.
Kill him.
Ward grabbed Matt's collar with one hand and dived toward the open door. With the other hand, Ward jerked the Henry up. Matt sprawled on the floor. Ward almost fell, but caught his balance, kicked the door shut, and dropped the bar that held it closed. The door and the walls were thick enough to stop the bullets from penetrating. Matt scrambled to his feet as Ward knelt at one of the rifle slits they had left in the wall.
They're shooting at us!
Yeah, they appear to be. How bad are you hit?
What? I'm not hit!
What'd you yell for, then?
I twisted my ankle when you jerked me like that. Should have been more careful.
Yeah, you're welcome for saving your sorry hide.
What'd you say?
Nothing.
Through the rifle slit, Ward saw one of the men pass by. Ward didn't think that his shot hit its target.
Take one of those other slits and give me a hand here. Maybe we can run these boys off.
Matt knelt and poked the barrel of his Colt through the opening.
Why are they trying to kill us?
Because you mouthed off at that fella Dixon. I reckon he must think he's the big skookum he-wolf around here. There's not much law in this territory yet, so the only way a man like Dixon can feel safe is by killing anybody he thinks of as a threat. Which now includes us, I'm afraid.
Matt fired off a shot.
But he's got no right. This is my range now.
Range belongs to whoever can hold it and use it. Right now, that looks like Dixon.
Can't get away with this. I'll have the army on him if I have to.
Oh, I was afraid of that.
Afraid of what?
You smell that smoke? They've set something on fire. Oh, I reckon they figure I'm burning us out.
When Jason heard the shot, he wheeled around. The sound seemed to come from the direction of Abigail's place. He trotted toward the adobe building, loosening his gun in its holster as he went. Saul Cohen and Randall Nordstrom both appeared in the doorways of their stores. Dr. Morelli stepped out the front door of his house, as did Reverend Milcher.
You need a hand, Jason? I'll get my shotgun.
Stay put.
Jason drew his gun as he reached the door of Abigail's. The acrid smell of gun smoke still lingered in the air, telling him that this was where the shot had originated, all right. Several tables were scattered around the room, with empty kegs serving as makeshift chairs. Abigail had placed several planks across barrels to form a bar on one side of the room. The tables were all empty at this hour. The three strangers stood at the bar with glasses of whiskey in front of them. Abigail was behind the bar, clutching the bottle she had used to splash liquor into those glasses. Wash Keogh sat on the floor across the room, his back propped against the wall. His right hand clutched his upper left arm. Blood trickled between the tightly gripping fingers.
What's going on here?
One of the men looked over his shoulder. He was a Mexican with a broad-brimmed sombrero cantered back on his head. His charro jacket and tight trousers were covered with trail dust, and dust also made his black beard look gray. He nudged one of his companions, both of whom were white and just as dusty and rugged-looking as the Mexican. The man who had been nudged turned toward Jason and raised his glass as if saluting him.
Morning, Marshal.
Are you all right?
Yeah, it ain't nothing but a scratch. See, it hurts like hell, but that's all.
Jason helped the older man to his feet.
Go on down and get Dr. Morelli to patch you up.
Oh, shit. This ain't hardly bad enough to bother the doc.
Go on, Wash.
Oh, ain't nothing but a flesh wound, just a scratch, that's all.
Who shot him?
How do you know he didn't shoot himself by accident, Marshal? The old man was packing iron.
His gun was still in its holster, and anyway, Wash Keogh is too savvy a man to ever shoot himself.
Keogh? I have heard of him. I did not know I was shooting such a man.
So you admit you're the one who gunned him?
I didn't hear Flores or either of us denying that. Did you, Marshal?
Who are you?
You know Flores's name. I'm Trumbull. This is Yates.
Howdy.
Why'd you shoot him?
My boots, senor. When the old gringo was coming out of the back room, he hit a spittoon with his foot, and he splashed on my boots. I could not allow such an insult to pass.
It was an accident. Wash had had too much to drink. He didn't mean to do it.
Senor Marshal, you do not understand. My honor was offended. I had to satisfy it, or I would not be able to live with myself. Consider the old man lucky. I could have killed him.
Yep, he could have done it, too. I've seen him kill men for less.
So I shot him and thus it was done. There is nothing more to say.
You're under arrest.
Oh, senor, you do not want to do that.
Don't have any choice. Put your gun on the bar and come with me. You two just stay out of this. It's none of your concern. You didn't shoot anybody, so you're not under arrest.
You got that wrong, Marshal. You're not taking Flores to jail. If you try, you die.
Who's going to kill me? You?
A man stepped out of the back room and aimed a shotgun along the bar. At the same time, another man appeared in the front door with a rifle in his hands. Jason barely had time to recognize Saul Cohen and Salmon Kendall.
Miss Crimp, you'd better get down behind those barrels, so when I pull these triggers, you won't get hit by the buckshot.
I got a beat on the ugly one on the end, Jason. You can have either of the other two. That is, if Saul's greener leaves anything of them.
All right. Looks like you settlers have got the drop on us. But don't think this is over.
It's over, all right. All three of you this time. Put your guns on the bar and step away from them.
Within a few minutes, the hard cases were disarmed, including the knife that Yates had in his boot and the long blade that Flores carried in a sheath worn down his back that was attached to a rawhide thong around his neck.
It looks like you're going to get some use out of that nice new jail, Jason.
And it's about time. I was about to decide we'd wasted all that lumber and energy.
The three of them marched the prisoners down the street at gunpoint, which attracted quite a crowd. It seemed to Jason that all 112 citizens of Furia turned out to watch, even though he knew that wasn't really the case. He saw Megan and Jenny, who were best friends, standing in front of Nordstrom's. The jail had two cells that faced each other across a narrow hallway. Each cell was enclosed by solid timbers, with no windows to the outside, and only a small window in each heavy door. They didn't sport iron bars like a typical jail cell, but the purpose was to keep prisoners locked up, so it didn't really matter what they looked like, as long as they did the job. Jason and his unofficial deputies herded Trumbull and Yates into one cell and Flores into the other. When the doors were closed, Jason snapped on them heavy padlocks that had come from Saul's store.
Eres un burro. Vete al infierno.
That was mighty close. I'm glad Saul and me got there when we did. You might have had a hard time arresting all three of those fellas, Jason.
You mean they would have killed me?
Oh, no. I'm sure you would have handled them just fine without us.
If I'm going to be the marshal of this town, I have to make sure that something like this never happens again.
The problem was, he thought as he dropped his hand to the butt of his gun and brushed his fingers over the walnut grips. Right now, he didn't know how he was going to do that. One of the men laying siege to the McDonald Ranch House darted into view, holding a makeshift torch. Ward drew a bead and squeezed the Henry's trigger. He saw the man with the torch go over backward, just as he drew back his arm to throw the blazing brand toward the house. The torch fell harmlessly into the dirt. But where there was one torch, there could be others. Ward couldn't hope to shoot all the men before they set fire to the house.
Sorry, Matt, but I'm not gonna sit here and burn to death. I'm just not.
What are you gonna do, surrender?
I'm going out there, all right, but I'm going out shooting. I'd rather die with a bullet in me.
Ward glanced up as he heard something hit the roof. That would be another torch, he thought. And sure enough, a second later, the smell of smoke began to get stronger. Ward stood up, his hands tight around the Henry.
Do what you want to, Matt.
He lifted the bar on the door, grabbed the latch, and threw it open. He charged outside and flung himself to the ground, ready to spray as much lead as he could from the rifle before they killed him. Ward lifted his head and looked around in confusion. The crackle of flames came from behind him. Twisting his neck, he looked back to see that the roof of the house was on fire, but Dixon and his men were gone. Quite a few riders were approaching the place. They had caused Dixon to flee, Ward thought, as he climbed to his feet.
Matt, get out here, quick!
Matt appeared in the doorway as Ward hurried over to lean a ladder against the wall. He propped his rifle against the wall and grabbed an empty tow sack.
What is it? What's happened?
Dixon's gone. We gotta get that fire put out before it takes the house.
Ward scrambled up the ladder to the roof and started slapping at the flames with the tow sack. Matt followed his example, and since the fire was slow to spread, they were able to extinguish the blaze in a few minutes' time. But even that was too long. The cloud of dust raised by the horses blew over the house, blinding both Ward and Matt for a moment. As his vision cleared, Ward saw a couple of dozen cavalry troopers reining their mounts to a stop in the yard in front of the house. A stiff-necked young lieutenant and a grizzled old sergeant were at the head of the patrol. The sergeant was a short, wiry man with a bristly gray mustache. His battered old campaign cap showed as much wear as the sergeant himself did.
You men, what's going on here?
Dixon had probably taken the approaching cavalry patrol for Indians, too. Or maybe he had known they were soldiers. Either way, the rancher and his men had fled, and that had saved the lives of the two men holed up in the house.
Mighty glad to see you, Lieutenant. As you can see for yourself, some fellas are trying to burn us out.
Apaches?
I'll ask the question, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Was it Apaches? And come down from there, you two. I don't like having to tilt my head back to talk to you.
No, with such a stiff neck, he wouldn't like that, Ward thought. But he kept the comment to himself as he climbed down the ladder to the ground, followed by Matt.
It wasn't Apaches. It was a son of a bitch named Ezra Dixon and some men who work for him. I want them arrested and thrown in jail, Lieutenant. They tried to murder us, and when that didn't work, they attempted to burn down the house around us. You can see the evidence of that for yourself.
So this was a civilian dispute?
It was attempted murder! Surely the Army doesn't condone such violence.
What the Army condones or doesn't condone is irrelevant here. Trouble between civilians is none of the military's business. If you have a complaint against this man, Dixon, you'll have to lodge it with the civilian authorities.
But, what?
You've heard of Dixon?
We've heard of him. High-handed varmint. Thinks he runs things around here because he's been in the territory longer than pert near anyone else. Reckon in a way he's right.
Sergeant.
Sorry, sir.
I'm glad we heard the shooting and came to investigate, but since there's nothing we can do, we'll have to continue our patrol.
What's your name?
I'm Lieutenant Wilfred Carter of Camp Grant. This is Sergeant Halligan.
Howdy.
I'm gonna lodge a complaint, all right, Lieutenant. But it'll be with your superior officer. I intend to tell him how you refused to pursue those men who tried to kill us.
You do whatever you want, mister. The captain will tell you the same thing I just told you. This isn't a military problem. It's a matter for the local law.
Damn it! There isn't any law in these parts except that blasted Jason Fury. And he's not even a real marshal.
Fury? Any relation to Jedediah Fury?
His boy. You knew Jedediah?
I ran into him a few times when he was leading the wagon trains west. How is the old boy?
Dead. Killed in a run-in with Comanche on the way out here.
Oh, that's a damn shame, and I'm sorry to hear it. Jedediah Fury would do to ride the river with.
Jason's the same way, or he's getting there anyway.
Well, take it up with this Marshal Fury, whoever he is. Sergeant, resume patrol.
Yes, sir. Move out!
As the troopers urged their horses into a brisk walk after Lieutenant Carter, Halligan paused to add one more comment to Warden Matt.
Like I said, we've heard of Ezra Dixon. He's a dangerous fellow when he's crossed. I reckon you fellas have figured that out already, but you'd better remember it.
Halligan gave them a curt nod, then heeled his horse into a trot and rode after the rest of the patrol, catching up quickly to take his place with the lieutenant at the head of the troopers.
Do you believe that? That damn lieutenant's just gonna ignore the fact that Dixon tried to kill us.
He's right, Matt. You need to talk to the local law about it. That means Jason, whether you like it or not.
Whose side are you on anyway, Wanamaker?
I hired on to help you finish your house and build a barn, Matt. That doesn't mean I'm on your side, or anybody's side for that matter.
Well, then get the hell out. I expect loyalty from my men, damn it.
Well, there's your mistake. I ain't your man, Matt. I ain't anybody's man but my own. And here's a funny thing. I don't feel much like risking my life for you anymore.
Ward didn't look back as he went to saddle up his horse and get out of there.
Go to hell!
As far as Ward was concerned, he'd already been to hell, and it was called working for Matt McDonald. With Flores, Trumbull, and Yates safely locked up in the new jail, Jason walked down to the house where Dr. Michael Morelli had his office, as well as the living quarters for the physician, his wife Olympia, and their three children. Olympia greeted Jason at the door with a smile and ushered him into the front room that served as an examination and treatment room. Wash Keogh sat on the long, narrow table. His buckskin shirt was off, and Dr. Morelli was just finishing the job of bandaging the old-timer's wounded arm.
How does it look, Doctor? Will this old pelican live?
Now you mind your manners, boy. Jedediah should have beat you more when you was young so you'd respect your elders.
He'll be fine. The bullet just dug a shallow groove in his arm. I've cleaned and bandaged the wound, and it should heal without much trouble. The arm's gonna be pretty stiff and sore for a few days, though.
Good thing it ain't my drinking arm.
Speaking of that, maybe you shouldn't be putting away quite so much of that Who Hit John. It can't be good for you. Tell him, Doctor.
Unfortunately, I'd say that Wash's insides are already as pickled as they're gonna get.
You see? What do you expect me to drink? Water? Hell's bells, next thing you know, you'll be telling me I ought to bathe in it.
Now that you mention it.
Gentlemen, why don't you take this discussion outside? I might have other patients to tend to.
Wash put on his bullet-torn, blood-stained shirt, grimacing as he lifted his injured arm to push it through the sleeve.
How much I owe you?
50 cents.
You mind, boy? I'm a mite short on funds at the moment.
Abigail Crimp got the last of your money, that's what you mean.
And she was worth every cent of it, boy, if you know what I mean.
Jason knew all right, although he would just as soon not have. He paid Morelli and steered Wash out of the doctor's office.
I've got a serious question to ask you, Wash, if you're sober enough to answer it.
If this is about how come me to knock over that spittoon, it was an accident, I tell you.
I don't care about that. I know you were too drunk to know what you were doing. We all lived through it somehow, thanks to good luck and good friends, but I'd rather not have to depend on those things in the future.
Just what are you getting at, boy?
Have you ever known anybody who was really good with one of these?
A gun, you mean? Why, I can handle a smoke pole about as good as anybody you'll ever...
No, I don't want a bunch of bragging. I want the truth. I've seen you use a gun, remember? You're not bad. Neither am I, but neither of us are what you'd call grease lightning with a Colt, either.
Yeah, I reckon you're right. You ever hear tell of a fella called Preacher?
I think I heard my pa mention him a time or two.
Preacher's a mountain man. He's getting on in years about now, but when these here repeating revolvers come along, he weren't too old to learn how to use one of them. Turned out he was natural born slick on the draw, son. Fastest I ever saw. Leastways, until the last time I run into Preacher. He was traveling then with a young buck he called Smoke. And according to Preacher, this here Smoke's even faster than him. Now, if that's true, then those two are a pair you'll never see the likes of again. What are you getting at, Jason? You ain't got me reminiscing for no good reason.
I have to get better with a gun. If I'm going to be the marshal of this settlement, there'll be times like today when I need to be fast on the draw.
The odds was 3-1. If you tried to shoot it out with them fellas, chances are you'd wound up dead no matter how good you was.
What about Preacher and Smoke? They handle odds like that?
Well, yeah, I reckon so, but they's different.
I have to learn to be that good. And I need somebody to teach me.
Son, ain't nobody can teach you what Preacher and Smoke got. They was born with it.
But I can get better. I'm already a good shot, an accurate shot. I just have to get faster.
Practice is the only way to do that. You draw that hog leg 100 times a day. No, 1,000. Do that for long enough and you'll get faster. I might be able to give you a few pointers, things that I've seen Preacher do over the years, but I ain't promising nothing, mind you.
Thanks, Wash. I'm obliged to you.
Best save your thanks until you figure out whether I'm really helping you or just making it easier for you to get yourself killed faster.
Jason didn't want the townspeople to see what he was doing, so he and Wash went behind the jail.
Okay, let me see your draw.
Jason stood with his hands hanging at his sides. His right arm moved, coming up fast in a smooth, efficient motion. His fingers wrapped around the butt of the Colt and pulled it from the holster. When the barrel was clear of leather, he brought the gun up with his arm extended straight out in front of him.
Well, that weren't too bad until you stuck your arm out like that. That takes so long you'd be ventilated before you ever got a shot off.
My pa taught me to aim a gun like I was pointing my finger.
Well, that's true, but you gotta learn to shoot from the hip. Point down there, not way up here.
Wash demonstrated by making a gun out of his hand, pointing the index finger, and sticking the thumb straight up. He pantomimed drawing several times, leaving his old pistol in the holster and using his hand instead.
Bam! Like that! You know, bam! Bam!
Can I play too?
They whirled around, and Jason's hand flew to the butt of his Colt. It was David Cohen, Saul's oldest boy, and his eyes were wide with fear.
Don't shoot me, Marshal!
Jason let go of the gun like it was a hot coal.
Settle down, Yonker. Nobody's gonna hurt you. You just spooked us a mite, that's all.
I didn't mean to. I saw somebody back here, and when I realized you were playing guns like my brothers and I sometimes do, I thought maybe I could play too. I didn't mean to cause trouble.
It's all right, David. You didn't do anything wrong, and nobody's mad at you. Just settle down now, all right? There's no reason for you to cry.
You're sure?
Certain sure.
Well, if you weren't playing, what were you doing?
Mr. Keogh was just showing me some things about how to draw and fire a gun faster.
Well, why would you need to know how to do that, Marshal? You're already better with a gun than anybody I ever saw. My pa says the same thing.
Don't say anything to your pa about what happened here.
Oh, I won't tell him. If you'll let me come and watch you practice.
Well, I don't know.
Don't see as how it hurt anything. I reckon we can trust this young fella to keep his word.
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Keogh. I sure can, I swear.
All right.
And when you get to be a fast draw, then you can teach me.
Now, David, we'll talk about that later.
Jason then started toward the street to see what was going on. Wash and the boy followed him. When Jason reached the front of the building housing the marshal's office, he saw Matt McDonald reining his lathered mount to a halt. Matt was hard on that pinto of his. From the looks of it, he'd nearly run the horse into the ground.
There you are, Fury.
You been looking for me, Matt?
Never mind about that. I've got a crime to report.
What sort of crime?
Somebody just tried to kill me, and I damn well expect you to do something about it.
What are you talking about? Who tried to kill you? Where's Ward? He was out at your place, wasn't he?
Ugh! Don't worry about that coward. Wanamaker's fine. Probably down at the crimp woman's place guzzling whiskey by now.
You still haven't told me what happened.
It was a man named Ezra Dixon. Claims he's a rancher. He and some of his men rode up to my place while Wanamaker and I were working. Dixon said that it was his range and warned me to get off.
Let me guess. You told Dixon to go to hell.
Damn right I did. Nobody's gonna come along and run me off my land.
So then they started shooting at you.
That's right. Wanamaker and I had to ford up inside the house and hold him off. Then they tried to burn us out.
What happened then? I can see you didn't get burned up.
A cavalry patrol came along and scared off Dixon and his men. If they hadn't, I reckon Wanamaker and I would be dead by now.
All this is interesting, Matt, but what do you expect me to do about it?
What do I expect you to do about it? I expect you to arrest Dixon and his men and charge them with attempted murder and arson. Wanamaker and I were nearly killed, and I'm going to have to replace the part of my roof that burned.
There's a problem there. Dixon didn't do any of that in town. My authority is only good here in the settlement.
Damn it! That son of a bitch lieutenant said he couldn't do anything about it either. Told me to report Dixon to the local authorities. That's you, Fury.
Wash nudged Jason's arm. Jason looked around at the old-timer, who nodded toward David Cohen, still standing there and taking in everything with avid interest.
David, you run on back to your pa's store.
But Marshall...
No arguing now. We made a deal, remember?
Yeah, I guess. I'll see you later.
You bet.
You really mean to tell me you're not going to do anything about what happened to me?
I can't, Matt. I don't know how to make it any clearer than that. What you need to do is figure out what county we're in and where the county seat is and report Dixon to the sheriff. He's the only one who had any authority to do anything.
Maybe you're just too scared to go up against Dixon.
If Dixon or his men come to town and cause trouble, I'll arrest them. Otherwise, there's nothing I can do.
Matt grabbed his unfortunate horse's reins and stalked away, jerking the animal's head to make it come along with him. He stomped off toward Abigail's place, no doubt intending to fuel his anger even more with some whiskey.
That fella just don't seem to like you, Jason.
Nah, the feeling's mutual.
Jenny Fury had been shopping with Megan McDonald when the trouble broke out down at Abigail Crimp's. She had seen Jason go in there and had worried that more shots would ring out, and her brother would never come out of the place alive. The relief she'd felt when she saw Jason emerge from the building, along with Mr. Cohen and Mayor Kendall and the three prisoners, had made Jenny's knees weak for a few seconds. She loved her brother. Even though she was going to marry Matt McDonald, as soon as he got around to asking her, she didn't want anything to happen to Jason. Jenny figured that in time she could get Jason to understand just what a fine man Matt really was. A while later, she spotted Matt riding into town, and her heart jumped, as it always did when she saw him. He was hurrying, though, like something was wrong, and he rode straight to the marshal's office. Jason and Mr. Keough and one of the Cohen boys came from around and back, and Jason and Matt started talking. Jenny couldn't hear what they were saying, but she could tell that Matt was upset. She bided her time, lingering across the street until Matt finished talking with her brother. Matt turned and started down the street, leading his horse. Jenny waited until Jason and Mr. Keough had gone inside the marshal's office before she hurried to intercept Matt.
Hello! What are you doing in town?
I came to talk to that brother of yours. There was some trouble out at my ranch.
What happened?
Some fellas tried to kill me.
Oh, no! Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. My ankle's a little twisted, but that's all. My new roof's got a hole burned through it, though.
Those men tried to burn your house down?
With me and Ward Wanamaker inside it.
Did you tell Jason about it? He's the marshal now. He can arrest them.
Yeah, I told him. But he refused to do anything about it. Said it didn't happen in his jurisdiction or something like that.
How can he be that way? He's the marshal. He's supposed to arrest anybody who breaks a law.
Only if they do it here in town, according to him.
We'll just see about that.
You'll talk to him for me?
Of course I will. I'll convince him to help you.
I don't need Jason Fury's help. I just think he should do his job, that's all.
That's what I meant. You wait right here.
No, I'd better get back out to my ranch. By now, Dixon and his men might have come back and burned everything to the ground.
You be careful, Matt. I'd hate to see anything happen to you.
Well, don't worry about me. Just tell that brother of yours to stop shirking his duty, that's all.
Then Matt leaned over, bold as brass, and kissed Jenny on the mouth. It was a quick kiss, but it thrilled Jenny all the way down to her toes, which curled in her shoes. Matt grinned that cocky grin of his as he mounted up and turned his horse toward the edge of town. Jenny stood there looking after him as he rode out of the settlement. Then she turned and clenched her fists in determination as she stalked toward the marshal's office. Jason was sitting behind his desk, and Wash Keough was at the black cast-iron stove in the corner.
Jason Fury, I want to talk to you. It's about Matt.
I'm not surprised. He seems to be just about the only thing you think about these days.
He told me what happened earlier out at his place. He also told me you said you couldn't do anything about it.
I can't. I don't have a lick of authority except here in town.
Well, that's just crazy. You're the marshal.
Town marshal? Matt's going to have to report Dixon to the county sheriff if he wants the law to do anything about it.
You're only saying that because you don't like him. You're not being fair to Matt. You've never been fair to him.
I fished him out of that flooded creek and kept him from drowning, didn't I?
I'm surprised you did that. It was out of your jurisdiction, wasn't it?
If Dixon comes into town, I'll have a talk with him. That's all I can do.
Your little sis sure has a burr under her saddle.
Jenny's always been that way. You can't argue with her. She's so convinced she's right that it's like butting your head against a stone wall.
Maybe you ought to go see this fella Dixon, not as a lawman, but as Jenny's big brother. After all, Mac McDonald's gonna be your brother-in-law for too much longer.
You know something I don't, Wash?
Hell, I got eyes, don't I? I seen the way them two look at each other. It's just a matter of time, and I don't think it'll be very long, neither.
I'm afraid you're right about that.
For what it's worth, even though I ain't got much use for Matt, he seems to really care for you, sister.
What would I say to Dixon? I can't tell him to leave Matt alone or the law will be after him.
Why not? You can tell him that if he attacks Matt's place again, you'll contact the sheriff. Chances are the fellow would be more likely to respond to a yell for help from a fellow badge toter. Maybe Dixon would see it the same way and decide to leave Matt alone.
I guess it's worth a try. Since it's your idea, though, how about riding out there with me?
You mean ride up to a place owned by a high-handed son of a bitch who's in the habit of shooting at anybody who gets in his way? Sure, why not? Sounds like it might be entertaining.
The first thing Jason did was to go looking for Ward Wanamaker, just to make sure that the story Matt had told him was really what had happened. Jason didn't think Matt had been lying about the fight, but Matt had a habit of telling every story so that he came off as either the hero or the victim, depending on the circumstances. Jason and Wash found the lean, sandy-haired ward at Abigail's place, leaning on the plank bar and downing a shot of whiskey.
Howdy, fellas.
Did you get those troublemakers locked up all right, Marshal?
Sure did. I haven't decided what to do with them yet, but they're locked up where they can't get out.
You missed one of them, I'd say.
Oh, now, Abby, you know that ruckus weren't my fault. I never meant to knock that spittoon over on Florence's booth.
Well, you might not have if you hadn't been so drunk you didn't know what you were doing. And my name's Abigail, not Abby. Thank you very much.
You didn't seem to mind how much booze I was drinking when you was collecting from me for it.
We came to talk to Ward, remember? Not to wrangle with Miss Crimp.
You should call me Abigail, Jason. We've known each other long enough for that.
You want to talk to me, Jason? What about?
I hear you had some trouble out at Matt's ranch today.
Yeah, and it sounds like there was a ruckus here, too.
Never mind about that. What happened to you and Matt?
A fellow who called himself Dixon rode up with some tough hombres backing him and tried to run us off. Said he was a rancher, and that was his range. Matt pretty much called him a liar.
So Dixon and his men started shooting?
Yeah. We got in the house before they ventilated us, and damn lucky we were to make it, too.
That's when they tried to burn you out?
Matt's been talking to you, I see. Yeah, they managed to throw a torch onto the roof. I was about to go out shooting rather than sit there and let the place burn down around my ears, but then Dixon and his men took off for the tall and uncut. A cavalry patrol came riding up a minute later. I reckon Dixon and the others heard the horses coming and took those troopers for Apaches. Good luck for us again.
Them soldier boys come from Camp Grant.
That's what they said. And Matt was madder than a wet cat when the lieutenant in charge of the patrol said he wasn't going to go chasing after Dixon.
A dispute between civilians is none of the Army's business.
Yep, that's what the shavetail said. But Matt sure didn't like it.
Yeah, he wasn't happy when I told him that I didn't have any jurisdiction over Dixon's activities either. As long as they didn't happen in town.
So you're not planning to do anything about it either?
I didn't say that. Wash and I are going to ride out and have a talk with Dixon. I can't arrest the man, but I can tell him that I'll call in the county sheriff if he continues to make trouble.
That won't sit well with Dixon, I'm guessing.
I don't care if it sits well with him or not. Matt was a member of that wagon train, and I reckon I still feel a little responsibility for him. And you're my friend, Ward. I don't like it when folks try to kill you.
Well, me neither. Well, good luck with Dixon. You want me to ride out there with you fellas?
No, I was thinking maybe I'd ask you to keep an eye on things here in town for me while we're gone.
Like a deputy?
I can't make that official, and I sure as hell can't pay you for it. But I've been thinking about talking to Mayor Kendall and the rest of the town leaders about hiring a deputy. At least part-time. If the settlement keeps growing like it has been, it's going to need more than one lawman.
That sounds like something I'd be interested in doing. For now, I'll be glad to keep an eye out for trouble, just as a favor to you, Jason.
I'm obliged. Come on, Wash.
They went to the livery stable down the street, saddled their horses, and rode out, heading south toward the McDonald Ranch.
How do you plan on finding Dixon Spread? I never even heard of the varmint until today.
Neither did I. But if he claims that Matt's place is on his range, it's got to be somewhere in the same direction, doesn't it?
Yeah, but this is a mighty big country. Dixon's headquarters might be 10 or 20 miles from Matt's place.
Jason frowned. He hadn't thought of that. He had been west enough times to know just how vast the frontier really was, but sometimes he forgot. Back east, finding someone was never really that difficult. There weren't miles and miles of empty range for them to disappear into. Jason was confident that he could locate Dixon's ranch. He rode toward Matt's place, intending to swing wide around it when they got there. At the same time, he could make sure that Dixon and his men hadn't returned to cause more trouble. That was the plan, anyway. Jason and Wash both reined in and went for their guns, but before they could draw the weapons, half a dozen men on horseback boiled up out of a nearby draw. Two of them carried rifles, and the other four already had revolvers pulled and leveled.
Now hold on, son. Let's take your hand away from that hog leg before you get holes blasted in you.
Jason had come to the same conclusion. He lifted both hands to shoulder level, still gripping Cleo's reins in the left one. Wash did likewise. Neither of them moved as the men rode up to them. One of the riders holding a rifle scowled at them. The men were all dressed like cowboys, and Jason had already figured out that they had to be some of Ezra Dixon's crew.
Who the hell are you two Rannies?
I'm Jason Fury, the Marshal of Fury.
What's that? Sounds like you're repeating yourself.
I said...
We know what you said. We've heard about that so-called settlement of yours. You're mighty young to have a town named after you, mister.
It was named after my father, not me. And there's nothing so-called about it. Fury is a real town.
An outlaw town, if you ask me. Those pilgrims had no right to settle there. El Despoblado is Mr. Dixon's range.
The area called El Despoblado is mighty big. Can't all belong to Dixon. In fact, I'm betting that only a little piece of it is legally his.
Legal don't matter. He's been running his stock on it for more than 10 years. It's his.
Legal matters to me. Like I told you, I'm a marshal.
Fake town, fake lawman. And you still ain't told me what you're doing out here.
Looking for Dixon's ranch, as a matter of fact.
You're on it. Have been ever since you left town.
What about Dixon's ranch house? Can you take us there? You work for him, don't you?
Damn right we do. I'm Ord Kirby. Segundo of the Slash D.
Marshal Jason Fury. This fellow with me is Wash Keough. All right if we put our hands down now?
Not until we've taken your guns.
I ain't much of a mind to be giving up my guns, Jason. Always felt them out naked when I weren't packing iron.
Did you say that old man's name's Keough?
That's right.
I've heard of him, Ord. He may not look like much, but he's supposed to be a ring-tailed terror when you get him going.
And I reckon the boy must be old Jedediah Fury's son.
You say you're just looking for the boss.
That's right.
What for?
I want to talk to him, that's all.
What's this about?
It's about the man Dixon tried to kill earlier today.
That son of a bitch had it coming. He claimed he had a right to be on Slash D range.
That's why I want to talk to Dixon. I hope we can clear all this up without any bloodshed.
Tell that to Ben Ellsworth. He's got a hole in his shoulder where one of those bastards plugged him.
What was he doing at the time? Trying to throw a torch on the roof of Matt McDonald's house?
A house that don't belong there. I reckon the boss is gonna want to talk to you varmints anyway, so we'll take you to the house.
And leave us our guns.
And leave you your guns. For now. But we'll be watching you mighty close. And if you try anything, you'll be full of lead before you can draw another breath.
Fair enough. Lead the way.
The riders formed a loose circle around Jason and Wash and set out toward the south at a brisk trot. Jason spotted a low range of brown rocky hills in that direction, forming the southern edge of the vast plain known as El Despoblado.